for a very long time. We've already played this game. Thank you for emailing me. What information?
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the April 10th meeting of the Yolo County, Yolo County Station District Board of Directors. I'll note that it is 6 o'clock on the dot, and we have ex officio member Dulcich here, Director Frericks, Director Vega from the City of Woodland, welcome. Director Lauren from Winters, and myself, Vice Chair Chapman from the City of Davis. So we do have a quorum. Moving things along here, we're going to move first to public comment. So public comment for any items that are on the consent calendar or any items that are not on our agenda here this evening, please feel free to come forward.
Alan Hirsch, this on? Thank you, Alan Hirsch, Yolo Mobility. I think I shall never see a poem as pretty as a tree. They indicate things in these pictures. The Yolo County Board of Supervisors handbook says 93% of all communication is non-verbal through pictures. But this body will not allow me to show maps to show things. Since Davis allows me to show pictures of trees, and we have had some, a tremendous increase in investment in trees because I show pictures of trees and the prices we have in Davis. But this body won't allow me to show trees, to show slides, pictures, maps, and slides. You will show outside consultants to show pictures. You will have staff to show pictures. You will have lawyers to show pictures, but residents of the community don't get to show pictures. I'm not asking more than 2 minutes, but I'll just show pictures. And it seems unfair. If you really want to have diversity of viewpoints, if you really want to listen to the public, and not spend more time, why can't I show pictures? I know you've turned to your lawyer, and the lawyer says, well, I'm brought up, you're not required to. But is the legal minimum what you want to stand for, or do you want to have the most productive meetings you have everyone can really be heard? I'm suggesting you should basically allow the public to show pictures just like everyone else who participates in the meeting, if you really want to listen to everyone at equal volume. Because if you don't let me show pictures, you turn down my volume 93% according to your board supervisors. And in order to get away with it, is this what you want to do? Please let me show slides this meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you to public commenter. Anybody else here in person would like to make a public comment? All right, seeing none, do we have any pre-recorded public comments?
We do not have any pre-recorded, but we do have Nadine Flynn who would like to provide public comment of you today.
Okay. Welcome.
Hi, thanks. I just wanted to note my presence here. I'm attending on behalf of Suki Juhal from Caltron. That was all. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Welcome. All right. Any other public comments?
There are no other public comments.
Thank you. All right. Well, seeing none, we'll move, bring it back to the dais here and entertain a motion to approve the consent calendar.
I then move the consent calendar.
Second.
All right. Moved by Director Frericks, seconded by Director Vega. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? All right. Moving right along, we're going to jump into our regular calendar. Administrative reports, we're going to switch things up quickly here. Are there any board member verbal reports this evening? Any of my colleagues? All right. Seeing none, we're going to jump to C, which is the executive director's verbal report, and then we'll come back to transit.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I wanted to make a couple of comments really to emphasize some of the items that are in the 80 Managed Lanes monthly report. I just did want to highlight a couple of things for you. We did not have a meeting of our ad hoc committee this month. We did not have I was not available and neither was one of our members. So there's no meeting to report on there. But we did have, importantly, a meeting at SACOG, at our regional NPO, with SACOG staff as well as staff from the Sacramento, El Dorado, and Placer transportation agencies to talk about establishment of a regional pooling authority for the Sacramento region to support the Caltrans District 3 as well, also participated in that meeting. It was a half-day meeting really to talk about kind of the broadly what a kind of a governance structure might potentially look like with various agencies, as well as kind of introducing some of the concepts that we're going to need to make decisions about for the YOLO project in terms of things like time of day tolling, how carpool vehicles would be treated, different kinds of policy decisions that will need to be made at some point. And all of this is in service of the goal of submitting an application to the California Transportation Commission for tolling authority, which we're hoping to do by the end of the year in order to keep up with our construction timeline. So those conversations are really just at the staff level at this point, but I did want to keep the board informed and happy to answer any questions that you have about that. I would say it was a very productive conversation. I thought the conversation was very, very positive and a lot of positive interest from everyone in the region. While we are the first county to be moving forward with express lanes, we're certainly not going to be the only one. I think all the other counties recognize that and appreciate the opportunity to sit at the table with us as we kind of develop this kind of first in the region project. The other thing I wanted to note is I haven't answered any questions on that. The other thing that I wanted to note is for our $86 million federal grant that is currently the major source of funding that we have for the project, we're working with FHWA on basically getting the change in scope. It was the scope as it was written, that FHWA grant was very broad. It talked about managed lanes, which they read interpreted as carpool lanes, even though it was carpool lanes was one of the options. Now that it is kind of overtly an express lanes project, FHWA has raised concern with that change in scope, and that it's going to have to go all the way back to the Secretary of Transportation, the Office of the Secretary. And so we've written a letter requesting a meeting with the Office of the Secretary staff in order to explain the reasons for this change and why we believe it's most consistent with our goals as well as state goals and federal goals, frankly, around climate, around equity. Just wanted to alert the board that that is, if there's a possibility, I think it's a remote possibility, but a possibility that the feds would not accept that change to the scope. And so that's something that, you know, we're very aware of, and I wanted to keep you all involved and in the loop as that moves forward, because it is, again, it's something that the kind of mid-level FHWA administration staff are concerned about. Hopefully it's not a cause for major concern, but it is something that we need to pay attention to. And then lastly, I wanted to note that one of the items that was previously agendized for this meeting was our Woodland Microtransit Service Plan, as well as revisions to our broader microtransit policies countywide, including our fare policies, which you've heard quite a bit about in recent months. We did pull that item from tonight's agenda in order to have more time for conversation with the City of Woodland. To make sure that they fully understand what we're proposing and think through the cost implications of that. So that's going to be coming to you next month instead of this month, but it's still very much in the works. And finally, I just wanted to introduce Julie Holmes, who is with Transdev and is filling in for Michael Klein tonight. And Julie has been with the team for some time. How many years? About 5 years. And she was just elevated to operations manager, which we're all very happy about, and congratulate her on her promotion.
Thank you.
And she's going to be giving the verbal report from Transdev too.
Sure, yeah, I'll bring it back if there's any questions from my colleagues for Autumn on her report before we move to Transdev.
Okay. I really appreciate your report. Oh, can you hear me?
Sure, thank you.
All right.
I was wondering if we could bring back the and bifurcate the issue of talking about woodland and woodland microtransit and bifurcate the cost of nice landing and winter's microtransit in the future meetings for the, that those issues could be addressed in a more friendly manner than maybe woodland's longer, larger concept.
If I understand, so you're suggesting that maybe we do try to move forward more quickly with the broader microtransit policy changes while we're kind of working out the woodland service plan themselves.
So, yeah, right.
I think that's something that we could look at.
Yes, we should be able to go ahead and break those items into two, and we'll bring a new policy, if that's okay with you, to this board next board meeting, and then that'll help us get them in place a little quicker.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that if I can bring the woodland number become more related to the kind of the woodland sort of plan itself, not the broader policy.
Thank you. Any other questions for Anwar, her report before we move on? Just a quick question I have. What are the kind of the report back or the milestones for being new to this board for the 80 managed lane project? When does that come back with their decision-making process, or what does that look like?
Yeah, great question. The next very clear milestone in terms of time certainty is around the release of the draft environmental impact report, which is Caltrans is the lead agency on that. But you know, we're as a kind of partner agency, we really want to make sure we're kind of actively involved in. So we'll be getting a report on that, and also taking opportunity for the public to weigh in with us as well as with Caltrans during the environmental impact review period. So that will, the EAR is slated for release in June. So I think we'll probably see that at a July board meeting. And then I would say that the other major milestone will be this fall around, if we are able to get there, establishment of essentially a joint powers authority to develop tolling or to administer tolling and an application to the DTC, which will require certain technical kind of products that we'll bring to the board for your input and consideration for that. So I would say July and then probably September, October timeframe. And then the final EIR will be certified by Caltrans. I think that's hoped by the end of the year. And so as a responsible agency under CEQA, which is our role in that, we will also be asking the board to take some action to certify. We won't be the ones certifying the EIR, but we can give Caltrans our approval for moving it forward.
Great. Thank you.
Sure.
All right. Moving right along, we'll move to go back up to 4B and welcome to
you.
Yeah, I'll do it after we go through the reports, not on every single one. Welcome and congratulations on having our chance seeing you pass the flowers here. So, yes, welcome. The floor is yours.
All right. So we currently have 60 operators. All right. So we currently have 60 operators, and we need 60 operators to. For our current service. We have 7 operators in training currently, and so far this week we have 3 interviews lined up. So we're at.
All right. Any clarifying questions or anything for the public? Sure. Director Burris.
Yeah, congrats on your new role. But also just wanted to ask, with regard to applications that are coming in, I mean, are you seeing sort of any upticks in, you know, the amount of people that are applying, or, you know, there had been some challenges a few months ago where people were getting through training and then just kind of not, maybe had to find another employment elsewhere. So I'm curious if the folks that have been going through training and they're now sort of, you know, operators are there staying, or, you know, just curious about some of that.
Actually, our current trainees that we've been getting in, they're actually staying. So we're on our way up. But I think there was some changes in training, and I think that's really done us justice.
Great, thanks so much. Appreciate hearing that update. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Director.
Sure. I did just follow up on an ad that one of the things that TransDev is doing is doing hiring fairs too. So besides just accepting applications, they're being very proactive and not just doing job fairs, but hiring fairs, which increases the amount of time before we get them into a training, and also has really increased how many people we give jobs to and who get to training. I really appreciate the hard work they've done.
I will just chime in on this. I do think it's a really important topic, and there's a reason we ask them to report on our driver's luck numbers every month, because we have had really struggled in recent years to have enough drivers. And I think that at the low point, we are down to 52 drivers, and so we're up to 60 now. But also, when we launch our Woodland Microtransit services, we want to have an additional 4.
Yes.
And, you know, you'll see we'll be talking about the budget next month and our service plans for next year. And all of that is going to continue to require more drivers. In fact, we didn't even roll out all the services we had in this year's budget because of the lack of drivers. So, you know, at a certain point, I will just say, you know, we may have to look at, you know, additional, you know, we've been forward approved an increase to our wages in November of 2021, I want to say. Given what the struggles we continue to have, we may have to look at another basically wage increase at some point in the future if we're not able to continue this. But we have seen an upward trajectory, and it's not due to any shortage of hard work on transit, that's for sure.
Yeah. Great. Thanks, Lauren. Just a quick follow-up. So what is the ideal, what's the optimal number of drivers to have with the services that we currently provide?
We actually like to have at least 68.
Almost there. All right. Thank you so much. With that, we will move along to 4E, long range calendar.
Yeah, do you want to go ahead and put up a slide deck for this All right, great. So, as I mentioned during my executive director's report, the Woodland Service Plan, which we were originally going to have a preliminary conversation about that this month and then approve it in May, we've now pushed that back a month, so we'll have a preliminary conversation in May, although per Director Lauren suggested we may be able to move forward with some of the policy changes next month, even while we're working out the details of the Woodland Plan. We're also going to, you're going to see a first cut of the 2023-24 fiscal year budget, and then also a first draft of the Zero Emission Bus Rollout Plan, and a progress report on our 12-month goals, which were adopted back in October. And then in June, we'll have approval of the budget, and then approval of the Woodland Service Plan, and then approval, final approval of the Zero Emission Bus Rollout Plan. So kind of three pretty major items, actually, that will be doing both preliminary and then final over the course of the next 2 months, so it may feel a little bit like Groundhog's Day. I'll leave it at that for now. I'm happy to answer any other questions on the long-range challenge.
Any of my colleagues have any questions or things they would like to suggest being added to long-range? Slide from Director Warren. All right. Seeing none, we will move to public comment. If any member of the public that would like to speak to this agenda item, please come on.
As that one first, I continue to express my concern that the discussions about IA and the tolling authority is happening behind closed doors. What happens with these meetings is the meeting has closed doors to release, results are released 4 days before the meeting, and that, in this defense, the meetings. There's no real chance for any important discussion. And we have a discussion of policy, a discussion of problem, confirmation bias. Some people want things to happen, and they have a bias, and they withhold information, or maybe attach the unconscious. For example, Caltrans, I'm sure, likes carpool lanes. It was revealed Caltrans finally did a study. They've had carpool lanes on I-99 south of Sacramento for a long time. They did a study. We see 47% of the users of those carpool lanes were single occupancy vehicles. They never enforced them. There was no incentive to make them happen, to really enforce them. So there's a confirmation bias with Caltrans. They want this to happen. They want the freeway to happen. And I would suggest in the alternatives analysis, the biggest decision is not what cars are going to be in that lane, because Grand is probably unlikely. So that's the tolling decision. And that's going to be decided behind closed doors in your meeting, and you're going to reveal it, and that's going to be the alternatives analysis chosen. You're already having discussions about the results of the alternatives analysis for the EIR, so that's what the tolling authority does. That meeting should be open. Now, maybe the Brown Act restrictions are not necessary. But you could make that meeting open, even though you don't need to legally. If your policy, if your goals, if transparency. That meeting should be open, and you should welcome dissenting and different opinions. I understand we're limited to time, but there are people who have who might puncture the confirmation bias that Caltrans comes in with. If you really want to have a diverse discussion of what's going to happen with those lanes. So I really, I urge you to open that meeting up, to welcome public comment, and publish the results of the meetings thoroughly in all the documents. I know it can be obtained by Public Records Act. I haven't done that. And what could be done, but I think proactively, I think it would stand you in good sense to maybe be proactive in just making those meetings open and making all the documents that come through that meeting public documents. Thank you very much. Here, I have something about trucks on freeway lanes that I'm going to share with you. Trucks have 75% more greenhouse gases per mile, and we give them a pass on some carpooling. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anybody else here in person that would like to bring a public comment on agenda item number 4? All right, seeing none, do we have any remote public comment?
No.
All right. Well, bring it back to my colleagues. Any last questions or comments for our staff? All right. Seeing none, we'll move on to agenda item number 5. Approved resolution, the update and extended memorandum of understanding with UC Davis and Sacramento Regional Transit Causeway Connection. I'm going to turn that over to Tom. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. So we do have a slide deck for this one, so we'll go ahead and screw it up next slide, Heather. So what is the Causeway Connection? Hourly zero-emission bus service between the main UC Davis campus and UC Davis Medical Center. It's free for UC Davis staff and students, and it is jointly operated by Yola Bus and SACRT. Next slide. A brief history of this. There was a three-party memorandum of understanding signed May 4, 2020, right at the beginning of the pandemic. The service had been planned for some time, but it actually launched, right then at the beginning of the pandemic. It was a two-year agreement, so it expires in a couple weeks, which is why it was very important to make sure we got this to you tonight. Battery electric buses, our Proteras, and chargers were provided for free from Electrify America for the service. UC Davis paid about half of the operating costs, and there's a federal CMAC grant that pays the other half for now. Those are one-time funds, and we'll talk more about that. But the service launched in July 2020, and it was originally envisioned as 30-minute headways, but of course, because of the pandemic, it launched as hourly headways. And because of that, because we only ran about half as much service as planned, the cost savings associated are going to allow us to continue that service beyond the 2 years that it was originally envisioned for. Next slide. So here's just a graph of the average daily ridership, which is basically just a graph of the pandemic. But what it shows you is that, ridership started out even in July. These were 2020, right? These are essential workers. These folks are still going to work. It was, 50 rides a day. Now we're up in the 300 to 400 rides per day area in terms of average daily ridership. Those buses, I ride them sometimes, and I know Matt does too. There's always folks on those buses, and there's a lot of regular commuters that ride it every day. Next slide. So what the proposal we have before you tonight is to approve an update to the MOU that would extend the service for 2 years through May 2025. So it would both extend the terms of the agreement and also we would change the pricing somewhat to reflect our higher costs that we have and as well as SACRT. The SACRT board is also taking the same action, voting on the same MOU tonight. And in the meantime, and the reason I wanted to just invite a little bit of conversation about this is that we need to think about the long-term future of this funding because basically once those CMAS funds, the one-time grant runs out, which we estimate will be about 2 years, the service is not, we don't have a way to fund the service anymore. Thinking about what some of those opportunities for funding may be, and kind of how we want to think about the whether or not we want to prioritize the service, we really need to start thinking about that now. I don't have any decision about that now. The action, again, is just asking for approval of MOU for 2 years. But I did want to just kind of suggest a couple of ideas as a starting place for funding. The first is state and federal formula funds. We don't currently use any of our state and federal formula funds for this, so 100% of the cost is paid by UC Davis and that federal discretionary grant. But we do have formula funds that we could tap into for this. And then another possibility is the toll revenue from future express lanes on I-80. I mean, the causeway connection very, very much perfectly coincides with the causeway itself. And in fact, it's one of the kind of BMT mitigation strategies that's currently kind of under consideration and will be included in the EIR is funding for actually increasing that rate on the causeway connection. So those are like a couple of ideas, but I wanted to just kind of invite your questions and your thoughts on the service and you know and where we go.
Yes.
I think that's my last slide.
All right. Thank you, Autumn. I'm going to turn to my colleagues if there's any questions for Autumn or our staff team.
Sure.
Jump in. Thank you. And really to compliment Waikiki and FACRT for the partnership in running the service. The rider, myself, it has been a great way to get from the data to the Med Center. And I really appreciate the on-time performance is amazing. The drivers are always friendly, and the buses are very reliable in terms of being to know where they're going to be and what kind of gauge the departure station. So really appreciate the service. And I think from the UC Davis perspective, trying to connect better to the Sacramento region is an ambition and a strategic goal of Chancellor May from UC Davis. And this partnership is a really great way to meet that and to have a better option for students, staff, and faculty to get from Davis into Sacramento either for internships, jobs, or even in evenings for nightlife and, you know, getting to the big city. And the bus has been a great way to do that. So thank you, for that. I think the other thing that was interesting in helping to form this effort was the initial deployment of electric buses and learning curve that went into maintenance, operating, the software platforms used for charging and all of the details that were kind of new to those districts to make that happen. So it's been interesting to see how that's accelerated. I think our thinking on electric buses and electrification of the things and I think the great step in the region is that both of those big transit districts are now have that experience and can think about procurement of their next generation of vehicles. So that's kind of my perspective. The bus service is great and hoping that we can find long-term funding that's more sustainable, but also knowing that there's a lot of ambition on the part of UC Davis to maintain the service, and I think the rider satisfaction is pretty high, taking back and forth across the causeway. There's a lot of kind of friendly faces and regular commuters who've gotten to know each other on the service, and I think the expectation is that they would like to have that continue to, go back and forth on the causeway.
Thanks for your comments. Anybody else, colleagues, have questions for Autumn or anyone else?
Sure.
Yeah, two quick questions. So appreciate the update and support, obviously, of the extension of the MOU, but sort of questions around, obviously, we have to look at sort of future expenditures in terms of where the funding might come from. I appreciate you highlighting that. The 30-minute headwind versus hour, I mean, is that something, you know, we'll probably maybe not quite there yet in terms of the ridership numbers that would justify it, but it is very much sort of a chicken and egg situation. So, you know, potentially if we did have 30-minute headwinds, we might see an increase in ridership. So curious about sort of that discussion, the 30 minutes versus hour. And then also, you know, I know last summer when we had the heat wave in September, we had challenges with some of the electric buses, particularly just actually having to heat like frying their electric wiring on the roof. So curious about that at all as well too, just from either our YTD perspective or also on the RT side of things, but how we're sort of addressing that issue and shape structures and things of that nature. Just curious about that. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, no, and I'll start, and I'm also happy to let Eric speak to some of that as well. In terms of the question of kind of, you know, going to 30-minute headways, you know, I think when we sat down and looked at this kind of extending this contract and a kind of three-way discussion with FACRT and UC Davis, I think collectively the decision was made to just kind of keep it at a current level due to a variety of issues, staffing being one of them, right? And also just kind of uncertainty about long-term funding. I mean, if we, you know, the more service we run now, the less, you know, the more quickly the funding is going to run out, frankly.
So that's kind of that piece of it. So I think the decision was made to just try to continue the service for now as long as we can. It's definitely been an experiment with the ProCaris, with the electric service, and it has, I think, positioned us really well as we're going into adopting our zero emission fleet transition plan, which Courtney's been working on. The ProCaris, all the electrical wiring is in the roof of the vehicle. During the heat wave, they stopped working. And, I mean, in some cases, like, they stopped working literally when the bus was on the freeway going 60 miles an hour. And I actually remember talking to a rider afterwards. I was on it, and she told me how scary it was that day. And I know it was really scary for our drivers, too, who experienced that, for everyone that was involved. So we ended up just making a decision to only run our regular CNG vehicles when the temperatures were above a certain point. But that's not the only issue that we have had. We've also had a lot of issues with the chargers from Electrify America, where I feel like there's like continuously at least one charger down, which then makes it so that we can't charge the vehicles. And so we've had to, I would say, you know, we've probably run CNG vehicles, 25% of the time. I don't know if it's quite that high.
That sounds like a pretty good estimate on the number. I mean, we've been doing a pretty good job of making sure to have the service be operated with electric buses, but it hasn't been 100%. And I do want to comment that part of the plan that we're putting together talks about trying to provide shade structures and charging associated with those buses as part of our infrastructure. So those are parts that were, you know, like Autumn said, having these vehicles has brought many lessons and some really important information for us to move forward with our new service.
And I'll just note one thing, which is that they did not have the same problem with ProCaris because their bus yard is underneath the freeway, so their buses didn't shake, and they didn't have that issue on the other
side.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else have questions for Autumn or team? One quick one I have. What's the amount we're talking about that's being funded through that? What's the magnitude of funds that we would need to be looking at?
Yeah, great question. And the service cost overall is about $1.2 million per year, of which about $600,000 comes from federal funds and $600,000 is from UC Davis. So we, you know, to keep the service going at that same level, I think we'd be looking for, I mean, UC Davis doesn't want to pay for it all themselves, and they're holding out of their spending on it. You know, we're talking about really $600,000 a year, approximately, of which, you know, half would be SAFRT if we continue to make current arrangement, and half would be from YOLO. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. And did you want to answer that now, the $600,000? Can you stop worrying about it?
I think, like Heather said, having more funding partners is the best way to do it.
Okay. Good. All right, so not seeing any other questions, so my colleagues will open this up to public comment. Anybody here in person would like to make a public comment on agenda item number 5? All right, seeing none, do we have any remote public comments?
We do not.
All right, I will bring it back to the dais for deliberation and entertain a motion.
I'll make the motion. I would move that we approve the resolution to update and extend the memorandum of understanding with UC Davis and Sacramento RT for Causeway Connection Route 138 bus service. As stated in the packet.
Thank you, Director Warren. Do we have a second?
Second.
All right. We have a motion by Director Warren and a second by Director Vega. Any other things good of the order? All right. Seeing none, we'll go to a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None abstained? None. All right. Motion carries unanimously. Thank you. All right. We are now moving to our last agenda item number 6, Downtown Woodland Transit Center Study, and we'll turn this over to Courtney.
All right. All right. Just want to take it easy to the board. So today we're here to discuss an update for the Woodland Transit Center relocation. We'll do the next slide. Thanks. All right, so a little contextual background. So what is a transit center? You can define it many ways, including a transfer point for getting to key destinations, You want the transit center ideally to be either, if there are two pipes, they're going to be on-street or off-street. We've got an example here from UC Davis where they have an off-street transit center. This is Memorial Union. It's tucked inside, as you can see. It's got locations for passengers to wait safely. They've got coverage. You've got amenities. And you've got displayed information letting you know where you need to go. Another key point of a transit center is it also provides multimodal connections. So not only walking, but hiking, if you're commuting, or if you need to drop off. It's supposed to be a hub where it allows you to get to where you need to go and connect using the bus service or other amenities. Next slide. So for Woodland, this is just an aerial view of trying to provide you here. That dot at the bottom is the is currently the current location for the transit center. Sorry, it's kind of hard to see. But what ideally what we're looking at in this proposal is to move, find a location that through our study will be more centrally located within Woodland. And so as you can see here, I know it's hard, but the goal from the study is when we contract with our partners to identify what would be the best location that would not cause us to have to change too much of our routing and service to accommodate, while also being providing a center that is more accessible to, let's say, the downtown corridor, even the courthouse. Next slide. Okay, yeah, so let's see. So this right here is showing just an aerial view of County Fair Mall. So the greens that are kind of like etched out are essentially vacant properties. The circle that you see is the transit center itself. And as most of you have known, if you spent some time at the downtown transit center, or not downtown, County Fair Mall, that there's definitely things that need improvement. Not everyone feels safe to be there. And so we've taken those comments into consideration. And this is just more of a visual kind of context. Next slide. So current status of County Fair Mall. So this is a picture that was actually taken today, went out today just before this meeting. So this is a picture of the now closed cinema. Some things you may know, kind of like what I recap, most stores are vacant. There's not really a lot of good lighting. And the area itself is not maintained, a lot of high weeds, still some vacancy issues. We'll go to the next slide and you'll kind of see, or one more. So I'll need to cover this real quick, but yeah. Continuing on, so we have some safety concerns that we're also dealing with why we're proposing this study. So I mean, if you can see a little bit, the lighting is right above the shelter, it's solar powered, but again, you're thinking about the coverage for the entire transit center at night, that's not going to be enough. And so you want to at least have some better visibilities. Again, as I said earlier, not close to any of the key destinations I mentioned, like a lot of the businesses in the downtown area or the courthouse. And then what I brought up earlier from the first slide is the lack of sidewalks and bike lanes. Again, there's not really that here. So one issue we've heard is that, you know, students trying to connect to go into Davis is that really their only option is either to get a ride or walk, depending on the time of day. That's really not, especially at night, that's not going to be ideal for them. And then the bike lockers that we have behind are not lockers. They're just kind of stands, and they're not really, I would say, adequate. So go to the next slide. These are just a couple more pictures, again, showing the lack of maintenance for the transit center area. That is a barricade. I'm assuming it's to prevent the homeless people from staying there at night. I'm not sure, but just, again, trying to capture that we're taking a lot of the feedback of what we've heard into and just showing you visually that this is an issue that we're taking seriously. And, again, these pictures are taken today, so letting you know that this is the current status of some of the surrounding area where the current transit center in Woodland is located. Next slide. So what has happened up to this point? So we've in August 23rd, 2018, we went under contract with Kinleyhorn to develop the original final report, which gave us the scope was based on an off-street transit center. So that's a key difference that I'll explain as we go into what we're planning to do with this current proposal for our study with Kinleyhorn. So also this report had a proposal for three sites. These sites were also off-street. And the final report was finished in 2019, but was not approved with a further action of what YOLO was supposed to do implementation-wise. And so we'll go to the next slide. So with that in mind, we've come to this point today currently where we have our draft proposal for you, in which we are planning to have a study for an on-street transit center that would be prioritizing the downtown corridor as a location that we would want to, that we feel would be suitable and meet the needs of our passengers while also providing a connectivity for businesses and some safety by having by being located in a more visible area. And so with that, this is a picture of the downtown Woodland, as you can see. And the main component of this contract, as I said, is that this would be for an on-street transit center. So similar to Merkley in West Sacramento, where it's on-street, buses can go on and then pick up the passengers and leave. And then with that, within this proposal, we expect to work collaboratively with the city of Woodland and our public stakeholders. And then we'll have a 10% design with the cost estimate as kind of the product that we'll receive, as well as a location that they would propose with kind of some work that YOLO would be looking with the contractor to make sure that we're in agreement before they were to pursue the final location and provide us the final scope and 10% design. So next slide. And so with that, we've come to the timeline and budget for how this process would go about. We estimate about 17 weeks. Now it begins from the time when, you know, the board first approves this proposal and then us finalizing the contract with Kimley-Horn. And then we estimate the cost would be roughly about no more than $75,000, and that we will present the final results at the October board meeting. Sources of the funds that from how we're able to do this are cost savings from our previous budget year. And I believe that includes presentation.
All right. Thank you, Courtney. Do any of my colleagues have any questions for our staff email?
Sure. Those pictures are pretty accurate. They're from this morning, but I frequent that area often, and it is really, you know, I wouldn't feel comfortable saying, say, my 15-year-old just go there and take the bus. It's very isolated. You can't ride your bike easily and safely over there. This is great. I'm looking forward to the results.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment. I really appreciate your being from Woodland, you know, your city, not being from Woodland, but, you know, being a person who has one of the properties. I think that if a large property isn't taken care of, it does attract kind of homeless and other behaviors, but that is part of an abandoned property or a low-maintenance property, not a part of, like, who uses the bus. And I just wanted to make sure that there's, like, a decoupling of what you're seeing at the site with, you know, riders. Our riders have places to go, their families, their children, their, you know, students, and we want to make sure that we have a good spot for them. So I really support the project.
Sure. Thank you for those comments. Anyone else?
Yeah, I appreciate the update. And I, you know, would love though if it's possible to go back to the next step slide or the sort of timeline. It's a great description, but also went really quickly, so I just wanted to take a look at it. No, that's not
that's not about your presentation.
Fair.
Next
slide.
The current proposal one? The
No, exactly. Yeah. That's great. So just wanted to, yeah, take a look at it again. See, there you go. You look up and it's gone.
And we're living in
I was pretty bummed out too. What was like, where are the hash marks and where
are
the
living?
Back when
it was meant to be on the
side of the sounds like Raymond is now being. And that slide would be, timeline would be great. Thank you.
What happens when you let us?
Dennis
So in that, I mean, I appreciate the sort of the work that is going to be done on this, and I know that the previous, the current, you know, the sort of new study is being done by the folks, the circle building team that's worked on the last one. And two quick questions. I mean, I think one, just the sort of the choices around moving forward with an on-street site versus off-street site. I mean, the off-street sites that were potential options from the first study actually are, I mean, solid, pretty decent sites, actually. You know, one right there on Main Street, sort of Main and East, essentially. So curious about why that is. I mean, I do understand the benefits of having an off-street transit center. I get that. I mean, but also, I appropriately enough, done off-street transit center that is also in downtown Woodland, which is what one of those sites was. Seems like it could also be something that is, you know, very successful potentially. So curious about that. I mean, why one versus the other? It does seem like an on-street transit center could probably be a lot less expensive. Maybe one of my guesses. So, and then curious about, you know, in the pandemic, we were forced to make real sort of pivots. I mean, and a lot of things, of course. Is there an ability to sort of pilot an on-street transit center essentially now? I mean, how difficult would that be? I mean, right, why could we not just have, you know, working, of course, in the city of Woodland, you know, you act out a couple of parking spots and you put up the, you know, the temporary bus signage and call it a downtown transit center and, you know, sort of, I don't know what the process is after, you know, final reports due in, we'll say, October 2023. Does it then take 2 years, 3 years to get a downtown transit center in place? I mean, because I think we're all in agreement. The photos show as well, but we've also heard from a lot of users that the current situation is not good. Mm-hmm. And so I think the key is to sort of try to figure out what we can do more, you know, sooner than rather than later. So I'm curious about sort of some of those items.
I'll jump in on that, and you know, feel free to jump in for them. In terms of the on-street versus off-street, I mean, you nailed one of the key issues, which is just the cost. I mean, actually purchasing a parcel, and going through the development process is, you know, it's a major cost.
Yeah.
And it's a little time-consuming. But I also think that, you know, given the volume of buses that we have here, this is not the UC Davis Memorial Union, like, we don't have that many buses, and you don't actually really even need that much space for the number. We're talking about 10 buses an hour, particularly since we've, you know, we're going to micro, we've gone from 4 local routes to 2 local routes. We're really not talking about that many buses, and we wanted to avoid, I personally want to avoid replicating the same situation that we had at the County Fair Mall, which is, like, getting a big parcel and it being mostly empty because it's a space for buses to turn around, and it ends up becoming a magnet for the same kind of behavior that we want to get away from. I mean, I think from the perspective of the downtown Woodland and the revitalization we're doing, better to leave those parcels for infill development, for transit orientation, marketing, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I think for the volume of buses that we're talking about, it can easily be accomplished with an on-street transit center that really kind of blends into the urban fabric. You know, and we're really talking about just kind of eliminating some parking spaces and then maybe making some renovations to the sidewalk, you know, putting in shelter, lighting, et cetera. And there's also just so much public land in downtown that is not, well, we're not having to put it directly in front of a business and take away parking in front of the business between the courthouse and the county, all the county facilities, that it seems like there's a lot of opportunity, in downtown Woodland, and that would allow us to move things more quickly. In terms of your second question that's kind of related on the kind of timing of how quickly could we pull this out, I mean, our intention is to, as soon as we have a location, make the minimum necessary improvements in order to actually move the service there while we then work on the kind of like long-term permanent infrastructure changes, whatever those things be. So I think we want to get there as soon as possible. What we don't want to do is move the services before we have a final location, because then we have to move them, because this is existing service that people rely on, and every time we do a service change, we're disrupting people's in patterns, disrupting their lives, and so we want to make sure we're doing that as infrequently as possible, and then when we do make a change, it's going to stick for a while.
Great. Okay. Great. Thanks so much. I appreciate it. And all those comments.
Yeah, thank you. I'm going to make a couple follow-ups on that thing. Right, so what are, not super familiar with Lynn, so what are the kind of the boundaries of where you, where it's too far, like, what are we looking at? Is it basically kind of by the courthouse, that area, is that like the ideal location, what you're looking at, or is it, I mean, how far?
Did we define it in the scope of work?
A little bit. I would say we probably want to go from east and then to court, roughly as our boundary, but part of the study is so that when we're working with the consultants, they can take a lot more analysis in regards to, like, patterns and the way people move and kind of the existing infrastructure to kind of help tease out what is the ideal location. And I'd say, so it's kind of like a mix of east of court, but then we're letting the consultant and the data kind of dictate sure this being the best location. And then, sorry, college students.
Great, thank you. And then I would assume when you're referencing public land, if you're saying you're utilizing that space and partnership with the county or whomever may be to use those spaces, we're not taking up parking in right in the middle of downtown, literally in front of business or whatever, right? And we're identifying some of these spots where you're able to get in the infrastructure and do it and utilize county land or...
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if we need to, for example, make the sidewalks wider in order to accommodate shelters, you know, I think it would be easier to do that on, you know, in front of the old courthouse where it's all just one, right, as opposed to, like, doing that in front of a business that's right on the street. So, yeah, I think we want to try to, again, have this kind of blend into the urban fabric as much as possible, close to the core of downtown, but in a way that, yeah, it's not going to be disruptive for existing businesses.
Great. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah,
This reminded me of submissions we had with during the park class, because they took some park class. That was a problem.
Yeah.
Right. So, and I look forward to, and I know we learned a lot from the deployment of park class, right, to ensuring that there's sufficient engagement with the community downtown. And there's not enough space there, and when you get cars and bikes and then moms on strollers or moms wrangling their kids, as I do often. It's just important to ensure that all the activities can exist in harmony and that the businesses aren't impacted.
Thank you, Dr. Moore.
Yeah, I just wanted to add, I hadn't thought about strollers, but you need a lot of room for that, but being in a multimodal agency, I'm hoping that, you know, we're really thinking about bikes and other ways that people get their last mile in our plan. That's all.
Great, thank you. And I think just to wrap up, I think that Charles Barrett, you touched on one of the things that we've learned in Davis with changing modes of transportation on folks is we started doing now, which you could touch on, are kind of these pilot programs and what does that look like, right? And not knowing the true impact that it has until those spots are gone and the bus is pulling up and what does that mean and noise and involvement, all that type of work. So there's ways that we look at that. I'm not quite sure that would be that'd be something I'd be interested in as well. Rounding up, thank you for this. In my 4 months of every meeting that I've been in, somebody has talked about this location and this spot, right? And the safety around it and what that means. So it's really important for this to continue to move forward. And I want to thank you, Dr. Warner, for your comments around the folks that are using these services, right? It's not indicative of folks that are taking transportation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So thank you for calling that out. So seeing that, I'm going to move to public comment. Are there any members of the public who would like to make a public comment on agenda item number 6? Come on.
Nolan Hirsch, I think on street transit center is probably appropriate because buses moving in and out quickly is really important and even off and on this work. Certainly appropriate here, activity center is really important. I wonder if a gateway shopping center has been considered because it would actually be faster to get in and out, the speed bus 42 around the whole loop. And then, because Woodland is near real, it is laid out on a nice linear street on Main Street. Couldn't we have a circulating bus that goes up and down Main Street that would feed the Gateway Mall? That's that traffic center. Maybe the savings by going through transit might help finance that bus on Main Street. And coming from Davis, the destinations I want to go to are basically the Gateway Mall. That's where the store that I want to go to. That's where people would feed the commerce stuff. Downtown, there's not many things I want to do except go to the supervisor's meeting, right, and talk to Lucas.
That's funny.
It was lighthearted. Thank you. Okay, thank you very much. I hope you consider looking at that as an alternative and possibly redeeming it. I'm concerned that the bus going through downtown is going to take a lot of time. And if we do that, we need to work with the city of Woodland to have signal preemption so the buses aren't caught behind that thing, because each other bus for 3 or 4 minutes to run, so we stop our clocks 3 or 4 minutes every time we go through there. So the equipment should basically be putting in preemptive spacing so the buses can speed through downtown Waterloo, wherever it goes. But like the bus on Main Street would be a wonderful sort of addition and move people back and forth, and those are the destinations people are going to. Thank you.
Thank you for your public comments. Anyone else here in the room like to make a public comment? Seeing none, do we have any remote public comments?
We do not.
All right, with no remote public comments, we will bring it back to the dais for any deliberation or any motion.
Happy to move the item.
Thank you, Director Ferris.
Second.
All right, we have a motion on the table by Director Ferris, a second by Director Vega. Any last comments, so you can agree the order? All right, seeing none, we'll go to a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstained? Seeing none, the motion carries unanimously. And with that, we are officially wrapped up. Director Stalwart has a big chair to fill with my two meetings. He had one less than an hour, and then we moved the meetings earlier in an hour than we thought, and the other one less than two. So I look forward to seeing everyone again next month. Thanks for spending time with us here this evening on this beautiful night. Thank you to our staff team for all your work on all these items. And with that, we are adjourned.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.